Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Kyle Swagger, back from
the dead.
Back from the bathroom. Yeah, from the bathroom, actually, all weekend. The last 5 days. It's good to be back. So, and it's great to have the entire panel is back with us. So everybody's back. We'll start off with our very early riser, Chris Dick. Hello and good morning to you, Chris. How have you been?
I've been doing fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Good deal. How was the vacation? Or if that's what you're going to call it.
It was, pardon me?
If that's what we should call it.
Yeah, it was more of a working vacation, but it worked out great, as those things tend to do. It doesn't matter. I heard you were very sick, and I guess anything is better than being sick.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. I'd take anything over how I felt, to be honest with you. So,
wasn't typhoid next week?
What's that?
Wasn't typhoid?
Oh no! It wasn't typhoid. It wasn't bird flu. It was the flu, but it wasn't bird flu. So I'm told. So I'm well now, so that's all I care about. Next, we've got Mr. Alex G. Fox is back with us. How are you, Alex? What have you been up to, stranger?
A bit of work and little bits of play and some, not a lot, but getting through the day anyway.
He took the no commitment jibe to heart.
Exactly. Yeah. I've just moved so much work to Monday. I'm never going to be able to get home that night just to get here today. So
proper commitment.
It's great. It's great to have you back. I mean, because you and Chris, because we both have missed you. And 2 weeks ago, me and you, and we're just sitting there, kind of looking at each other, going, Speaking of Mr. Rankin, how are you, sir? I haven't heard from you all day today. I've been out.
No, I've just been busy doing the Bagel Tech for this morning for Bagel Tech News, and then setting everything up ready to go today for all the shows that we got. We've got some fabulous shows today. One that we've got later on that we really need to push is that we've got Graham Cluley coming on, who's from Sophos, who are an antivirus firm and web security firm. And they've discovered a Trojan for Mac called Musminim A. And he's coming on with Mark Sunner, our security expert, and he's going to talk about the Mac world at the moment and what they need to do. So it's a really, really good show. I'm looking forward to that. It's 3 p.m. this afternoon, so that I'm really looking forward to that show.
Yeah, I'm going to tune in for that one for sure, because I'm very, very interested in that as well, about the upcoming viruses. Basically, that's what you're going to be dealing with, right? Viruses on the Mac.
Yep, exactly. So I know a lot of people that listen are Mac users, photographers, so... could be interesting.
And by the sound of it, something we all need to be thinking about.
I'd hope so.
Well, I'll be honest, I'm in the crowd that, hey, I'm on a Mac and I feel really safe. But apparently we're not as much as we thought were.
Yeah, it's a false sense of security. That's I've got a lot of Macs kicking around too. I'm not looking forward to that.
Well, I've got to admit, I run two different virus programs all the time on my Mac, so...
Well, the thing is, as well, with Sophos, they give a free version. So if you go to sophos.com, you'll see there free Mac antivirus. It's absolutely free, and it's a better quality one than something like AVG. And it updates itself every 2 minutes. So you really are on the cutting edge with that. And it's free of charge, and you can put it on as many Macs as you like. There's no limit, so just go for it. Just stupid.
Well, speaking of Macs, and go grab that, because I'm going to do that too. I just, by the way, just got a secondhand Mac, so I'm happy again. It's not up. It's not working yet. It's going to be plugged in before the Mac show, or unless I don't get to be on the Mac show. Speaking of Macs, let's get this out of the way. iPad 2. Camera, front-facing camera. It's got a camera. We'll talk about it for 30 seconds. What's everybody's take on it?
Just a very quick take. We spoke about it, I'm pretty sure, on a photo show a couple of months ago. And Mr. Rankin said no one's allowed to disagree with him. And he said there's no way it will have a rear-facing camera, because what's the point of it?
Yep.
That's all I want to say.
I was waiting for that. Yeah, I was waiting for that. Unless we were just talking before we started.
Unless you can find that
play
audio
on the podcast. And for some reason, I feel like I'm talking over somebody, so forgive me, because I can't hear you very well. You were saying before we hit play on the podcast that you're waiting for iPad 3.
A little bit, although the iPad 2 does have the photo booth in it, as far as I know, which will be endless hours of fun for the kids, which I think is going to be great. But yeah, I think that as we've seen with the iPhone, it takes a couple iterations for Apple to get something out there that you're just that. I mean, I'm not going to say that there's no wow factor when it first hits the store. Obviously, the first iPhone, the first iPad, people are like, holy moly. But and then the iPhone 4 comes along and you're like, wow, here we go. This is like what I used to see in science fiction. And when the iPad 3 comes out, probably with a super awesome screen, ability to play Flash or whatever occurs at that point, some workaround. And I think that at that point, we're going to, and they'll hammer at the dual processor kind of stuff and maybe even better battery life. And hopefully, I don't know if you guys have heard of Leapfrog. It's like a kid's, you know what I'm talking about? And then Nicholas Negroponte's One Laptop Per Child. Both these things function very much like our stuff, except you can put peanut butter on them, drop your juice, and have them fall off the counter. I want that in my next everything. I want to have my iPad 3 be able to withstand a nice drop, some peanut butter, some juice, whatever I throw at it. You know, you're working out in the rain, some mud gets on it. That's what I want. That's my dream computer. Dogs out there have destroyed stuff in the field that feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, I've dropped my iPad on a carpeted floor from kind of waist height, and it's been fine. And I've had the kids spill juice on it. It's not been immersed in anything. You know, I wouldn't suggest it was wash off, but you know, it's had a bit of abuse, and it's done okay. So. I think the thing's the case, though, isn't it? You know, there's a few people who have brought out the tough cases for them, certainly with the military in mind, and it's the case thing that's going to be the thing that sways it.
But it's amazing that the children's manufacturers are like that One Laptop Per Child, which you can like drag in the sand, and has the better Wi-Fi signal than anything else out there. And they drop how much is that? Like $350 or something? And this iPad for kids is like $100. I want that functionality. I want that safety net when I want to make it, call it like, you know, the iMan pad or something. I don't know what you want to be. Market it any way you want, but
iMan pad. I just wanted to get people's take on it because it is the hot news of the week, and it did have the cameras on it and basically Alex's thing on it because of the rear camera. So,
well, hang on a second.
Are you going to get one?
Well, hang on a second. Just let's put this in perspective. Let's remember that they've done a significant update to iMovie. I mean, we're not talking a small thing here. This is a very, very powerful editing tool for it. So if you've got something that powerful, you're going to have something that will capture decent quality video for you then to edit in something that powerful. If you look on the website, it's capturing in 720p and it's pushing back out in 720p at 30 frames per second, but there is no mention of the stills quality. There is no mention of the stills camera at all. So at best, this is the stills camera that's already in the iPhone 4. And I did say, what's the point?
Don't you think?
In which case, I'm saying still, if you're talking about stills photography, what's the point? There isn't one.
Yeah, it's a little bulky and awkward.
Exactly. Thank you. So stick that in your pipes, Fox.
Yeah, what about?
I think FaceTime is the killer app.
Exactly. FaceTime on the move.
Definitely.
Yeah.
If you're showing a house or something, you know.
Yeah, virtual realty. That would be a huge market for this. Definitely, good one.
Back in your face, Mr. Rankin.
All right. Well, let's move away from the iPad now because I just touched on it. It's there. Camera, iMovie. Hoo. We'll find out in a few days. So, let's get into real photography now. And I don't know how really real this one is, but we'll start off with this because even you, Alex, are kind of commenting about the new Sony 7.7 megapixel CMOS sensor, and you're thinking, could this be something we're going to be seeing in cell phones? And you know, while we're on mobility, let's talk about that a little bit.
17.
Yeah. 17.7. Is that what I said? No, or did I said 7.7? 17.7.
Yeah. Alex?
Alex, please, your thoughts.
No, I mean, I sort of looked at this again. I mean, we're talking about cramming so much into such a small space. Not sure what the point is, but I think Ewan mentioned it on one of the early morning news segment that Sony want to relaunch their Walkman range.
Yeah.
In a new version of. Well, the only thing they can do is make it an all things to all people sort of Walkman. And if they can stick in a 17.7 megapixel CMOS sensor into it and turn it into a very high definition flip type device as well. So it's got, you know, the camera is part of a bigger system, then I can see why they've developed this sensor. Because let's face it, if you're going to buy a Sony Walkman, you're going to be buying it for branding and names and tricks and bits and pieces. You're not necessarily going to be buying it for the quality of the MP3 or the quality of the camera. So you're going to need big numbers to get people away from the iPod and the iPod Touch and things like that. You know, anything else with a camera. So I think, you know, this might be what they're going for. I can't really see the point of it, but if you want numbers, these are really, really big numbers.
I think what's impressive about this is the fact, I mean, we're always going on about size of sensor, and this is a really small sensor. This thing's 6 mil across. You know, for the whole package, the whole enclosure is 6 mil. What you're looking at, though, is 34.8 gigabits per second of data bandwidth, and you're also looking then at 120 frames per second video capture. So this thing's going to go, this isn't going to be stills. So you're not worrying about high-end quality for video stills at 17. You're talking about high-end video capture at 1080 maybe, which is not going to be an issue because you don't need, you know, what I'm saying is that the stills element, you'd expect a far higher resolution than that's going to give you, whereas you can go this small and get really great quality video at 1080p, and that's what this is probably going to be used for, I would have said.
Go ahead, Chris. You were going to say?
Well, 120 frames per second, that's very interesting. I mean, that's clearly way more than, I mean, 30 is the standard, so 120 is great for slowing things down. It sounds like it's maybe they're gearing this towards or to incorporate a lot of sports photography that you might want to, like, bring your cool Walkman. So it's like a built-in kind of, what's the name? The HD GoPros.
Flip.
And a Walkman all at the same time. So you strap it onto your head and listen to something. I'm not entirely sure. And it's all part of your phone. But I mean, again, it always comes up to this whole, you know, the megapixel myth, right? Like, it's only, it doesn't matter how many megapixels you have, it's only as good as the lens in front of it, right? So it's interesting to see what kind of glass will slap onto it.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the flip, and we're seeing these kind of better cameras coming out in cell phones now. Do you think these flip cams are better than most cell phones, or do you think the flip cams are dead? I'll start off with you, Ewan. What do you think?
I think the flip has got a real challenge ahead of itself if you're talking about the iPhone 4. I mean, we were talking to Cliff Ravenscraft on the day that, or the week that the iPhone 4 was launched, and he was saying, look, you know, I've got this iPhone 4. I love it. I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. But think about it logically. You want a flip video, there's a couple of $100 straight away. You want a decent piece of editing software, you're talking $30 off the net. You want a decent camera, you're talking $200 to $300 straight away. And then you want a cell phone on top of that, you're talking about $200 plus being tied in for 24 months to a contract. If you don't want any of those things, go out and buy an iPhone 4 because it is replacing the flip. It's replacing a compact camera, and it's replacing your average cell phone. I don't know about the compact camera bit, but certainly as far as the flip goes, I've got a flip HD and I've got the iPhone 4 and I can't tell the difference. So, yes, it's a killer for the flip. Flip have really got to do something special now. And this sensor, if it's going to do this kind of thing where you'll be able to have 128 frames per second, slow stuff down, you know, kind of hit the prosumer market on video with a very small device, that would be really cool. And they're going to get away with it because of the fact you can get away with lower resolution in video. You aren't going to get away with it in stills. And I don't think this is going to be a killer in stills, exactly with what Chris says there.
One of the things you can do with such a large sensor, though, in a video camera, is you can use a crop to enhance digital zooming.
Mm.
If you've got so many megapixels to play with, you know, it will be a digital zoom at 1080p that will actually work. And it's rather technical, and I could explain why it would work, but it would make digital zooming possible. So you wouldn't need, you know, an extendable lens on the camera.
True. Good. I think the going back to the flip real quick, I couldn't agree more. It's a giant flip fan, or used to be, and they're great to shove in your pocket if you don't have a phone, like the iPhone 4. But I mean, they're a killer app if we lest we forget, was the big red button, right? The thing that made it super easy. But,
yeah.
But right, that's how the iPhone operates now. So you don't really, but when Flip came out, that was the, you know, it was the big demystifier. It's, oh, point and shoot video. We're done. Yeah. And then, you know, now everyone's got it, including your phone. So to, as a separate add-on, it's not really, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how they handle how they handle their future.
And I think the thing as well, though, with that, Chris, was the big red button was the great part of point and shoot, exactly as you say.
Right.
But what went along with it was the fact that it had killer autofocus and killer depth of field on the video as well, which the iPhone's kind of there, but not as good as the Flip, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that surprises me to hear you say that, Ewan, because I actually thought that the... Because we all, let's all face it, we all hate digital zooming. I particularly hate digital zooming, and I'm not a pro at it, but I've noticed from day one, it just, we're just not there yet. It just sucks still. But I actually thought, and again, this is probably light. This has a lot to do with the light that you're filming in as well, is that the iPhone 4 actually outperforms most of the flip cams. Personally experienced, though.
I'd say it's about level. I wouldn't rate it higher. I mean, because I think if you're looking at low light conditions, I'd say Flip's still got the edge. But it's, you know, in a you know, average kind of like a barbecue or party environment, I'd defy to see a difference, really. My view.
All right. Okay. Good enough. That's what this show's about. Everybody's opinion.
Yeah.
Let's move on now. Speaking of Sony, they're indicating all future Alpha models will include translucent mirrors, and by the looks of the picture over here in Engadget, translucent cameras.
I don't know if that's one of those kind of promo moldings that they do, though, or whether it's real. I don't know if you can buy that.
I'd love to buy this. It looks cool. I like stuff that you can look inside of and see exactly what you paid for.
True.
And nobody else can see this right now, so
no, I can see
who
it.
Wants to explain this to me?
Well, the translucent mirror thing is going to stop the mirror flipping up. So what you're going to end up with is a mirror-like effect, but you can shoot without moving the mirror. So you'll have an SLR functionality whereby you're bouncing the light back up to the viewfinder. But standard practice now is the fact that you'll then have to press the shutter. The shutter will trigger a movement of the mirror and an exposure of the sensor. Now, that takes time, and it also takes space because the mirror has to physically move in a void. If you've got a mirroring system that doesn't have to move, you can instantly then start to think about shortening the distance from the bayonet to the sensor because you haven't got to move the mirror out of the way. You may also be able to play with the angles because of refraction. You might have a different coating or something that will mean that it instead of being at 45 degrees for the bounce angle, it could be at 30 degrees, maybe. I don't know.
Well, didn't Canon come out with this? I got at least over 10 years ago. I remember playing with one at the workshops, and it was very strange to me. It had it was a translucent mirror. It didn't have lockup. You could shoot. It was designed for sports way before digital. I shot a basketball game on it. And I remember thinking how weird it was that I was so used to, although you don't really process it when you're shooting, that little moment of black where you actually don't see your photograph, but the absence of your photograph kind of in your head, you're like, oh, I think I got it. But you never really know until you souped your film.
Yeah.
But didn't they have that a while? Like, this isn't the super new technology. It's only, as far as I know, I tried to Google it and I found Canon preparing new things. I couldn't find the old version, but it was on their EOS line, you know, 99, 98, something like that. Does anyone remember that?
Did it ever really work, though?
I don't think so, because it disappeared pretty quickly.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It was like a demo model they used. And I just remember, all I really remember was going, wow, it's strange to watch the guy get a basket. You know, and you realized, yeah, I don't think ever, obviously I've never really
you're not
seen
sure when you
get a basket
it,
through my camera, because it's always a little moment of black.
Mm.
So I didn't really know what was going on. But it advanced the film much quicker.
Yeah.
Which is why they're putting it out there. And
maybe what happened there was you kind of hit the cusp where digital started to take over then around the 2000 mark. So that would have killed the technology instantly if it was oriented to the film market. Yeah. I don't remember it, I have to say. I don't remember that at all.
One of the advantages of mirrorless cameras is, there's two advantages. The first one is live view works a lot better, and you can focus properly whilst in live view mode, which you still can't do.
Yeah.
On any camera, it doesn't work. And I mean, I tried focusing in live view on one of my Nikons the other day, which I didn't even know you could do. I was just happened to be flicking through the camera and wondered what that setting was. But it won't focus. It says it will, but it will only focus on something with a very, very high contrast. Mm. So forget that already. And also, when you've got a mirrorless camera, you can do video and still simultaneously.
I was going to say, if you were saying a while ago that Canon was, you know, 10 years ago, Canon was coming up with this, is this sort of a Canon patent on this and they just decided to let it go? Or is this sort of Sony picking up where Canon left off? Because if you kind of read into the article a little bit, it's more of Sony's way of trying to come up to the level of Canon and the folks of like at Nikon.
I don't think they're coming up to a mirror, though. I mean, that's pretty old technology, but certainly the configurations and the interactions of the components are patentable, the arrangement, but maybe not necessarily just a translucent mirror. One way mirrors, they use them in cop shops all the time. So.
Yeah, true.
No, what they're doing here, I believe, is purely that they can't really catch Nikon and Canon with the technology that Nikon and Canon have got. They've sewn it up. That's basically what they've done. But as it's a new type of technology, it's a free-for-all. Everyone can be the first to get there. And so this is their only chance of getting a lead on anyone.
I mean, it's great. It's a leap forwards. And if you've got the Sony lenses, then you kind of, you know, that's the key issue we've always said, isn't it? When the lenses are the things that lock you in, and if you've got the lenses that fit the Sony, I think they're Micro Four Thirds, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you've got some expandability there, and your manufacturer is showing interest in your original purchase, which is nice. Whereas, you know, Canon and Nikon, to a certain degree, can be accused of being a bit lazy because they know they've got you because of the lenses. They don't. You look at the advancement of the pro market. The advancement of the pro market is really crappy compared to the consumer market because they know they've got the pros because of the lenses.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, sorry, I actually had a point.
No, I was just going to say,
I don't know what it is with you guys. I apologize. I'm having a hard time hearing all of you, so my apologies if I keep stumping all over you.
Just carry on, dude, because I've got to edit that now.
Okay.
Okay, now it's just a question I'd wanted to ask Ewan and Chris in case they knew. When you have a compact camera and the actual lens is only millimeters away from the sensor, you can get a very, very low f-stop on a small cheaper lens. Now, if you do away with the gap between the mirror and the sensor, are you going to be able to get, you know, lower f-stops on, you know, comparatively cheaper lenses on the DSLR market? Will that bring sort of 1.8 lenses down in price in the same way as the lenses for a compact that work in a similar way are far, far, far cheaper?
I'm not right on the physics with this, but if you're going to bring the lens closer to the sensor, doesn't that mean that your last part of the lens is going to have to be thicker by nature of bringing the thing back to focus? It's not the same quantity, admittedly, but it will increase the thickness of the last lens. The last piece.
Yeah,
of
no, I can. Yeah, final yeah. Plane. I'd say the diffraction on the end has to be slightly more.
I don't know. I don't know. I might be wrong on that, but that's just a thought that suddenly struck me there. Yeah, interesting.
Chris? I'm not sure about that at all. Yeah, I'm. Yeah, you're right. If it's thicker, then that would bring the price up, maybe, or they have to reconfigure the entire
heavy
thing.
Weight
I'm not
the
sure.
Lens.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, that's well, a weight
speaking
on the
of Canon.
Well. Go ahead.
Speaking of Canon, I was going to say that this week is something actually Alex has pulled out of the stories this week. Is this going actually on in Birmingham right now? Is that right, Alex?
Yeah, there's the sort of the foremost UK photographic trade show, which
the trade show, yeah. And Canon's pulled out of it.
Yeah, it's there's been a lot of speculation as to why they've done it. Canon did throw their own trade show, you know, Canon only trade show last year, which none of the other photo companies have ever bothered to do before. It strikes me, perhaps, as Canon thought they were going to have XYZ ready for this show, and they haven't. So maybe they've pulled it out so they can do an Apple-style, all singing, all dancing, only Canon sort of event later on in the year. because it seems to me they're not ready to release whatever it is they wanted to. Mm-hmm. It brings us in also to this new Nikon, which I'm going to bring up because I think it's going to be, if these rumors of this new Nikon D800 are right, it's mm-hmm. going to be an immense camera for the price. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see Ewan's face. I think his teeth are grinding. I can hear it.
Because I can't go anywhere.
Hear it,
got the shackle around my neck.
No, but I think, you know, I think Nikon hasn't brought out a decent upgrade for quite a while now. You know, they've got one top end camera with a good high number sensor, and everything else is still relatively low compared to Canon. And Nikon have waited and waited and waited, and I think they're about to launch their spoiler camera, their spoiler against Nikon, because Nikon have had the numbers for a long time. And I think Canon wanted to get their Nikon spoiler out, and I don't think it's ready, so they've withdrawn from this show.
It could be. I mean,
what do you think, Canon boy?
Well, I think the only thing that I can say is I think trade shows are struggling, real struggled, and I'm not sure whether this is a permanent pullout from trade shows, because I mean they're going to be at Photokina. There's no question they're not going to be at Photokina, but this is a smaller trade show, and if you're looking at trade shows struggling, you drop the small ones first before you get to the big ones. Mm. I think with the internet, you know, this is a tough time for them, and general consumers aren't going to be attending this easily. The only thing I will say is that trade shows tend to be for real saddos, and the one thing that you've got in the photographic market is that most of us are real saddos. So we're really anal and really interested in crap that doesn't matter to anyone else. So I think I agree with Alex.
Do you think, Ewan, that you mean by trade shows, though? Do you think that's just for the camera market? Are we talking about trade shows in general? Because if you're talking about trade shows in general, CES this year was one of the most attended in its history.
I think that the problem that you've got is that the trade shows are expensive. They're not cheap. And I think the problem is that the venues that run them get far more from concerts and from other things where you're dealing with general public far more than looking at products that are available readily on the net. And I think there's a disparity growing between the cost of the stands for the venues and running these things than actually the real sales benefit that they get from it. Because don't forget as well, it's 99% intangible unless you're selling at the show.
But if you've got nothing new to announce, it's almost like broadcasting the fact that you've got nothing new to announce.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris, your thoughts. When's the last time you've been to a trade show?
I don't really go at all. But there's no shortage of them in Toronto, too. The store sponsored them and everything. But, the internet is... I kind of check out other people's demos and the stuff that they put up on the websites and the reviews. I mean, it's internet's a wealth of information. But speaking of which, bringing it back to the Nikon 800, which I'm interested to see what happens with it. I've been going through and the wish list that it's going to have compared to the old D700. And I mean, it seems there's a pretty good case that this 800 is coming out in May or whatever it is, or August, I think, with, you know, the publishing of certain how-to manuals and things. But what I don't understand between Canon and Nikon, I think I mentioned on the show before too, is they tout their video technology and yet nobody puts a headphone jack on their camera. Like, it's the most insane thing I've ever heard ever in the history of video capture. Like, you need to hear, you know, they have all these wonderful things. Oh, you can, the Canon has variable audio input. Nikon has three settings. Hopefully they have variable audio on the 800. And yet none of them put a headphone jack so you can hear, like, if wind hits your mic or if a necklace bounces off the lav. Like, it's absolutely crazy. And I see all these people shooting with their cameras and they don't have headphones on.
It's just shit. That's insane. Generally does a good
you should
job.
Never shoot anything without headphones.
Yeah. Good one.
Unless it's a flip or iPhone kind of thing. I mean, yeah, that's fun. I mean,
can we move on now? I feel like I'm watching you two boys make out with the prettiest girl in the school. I can't, and I'm the ugly one. Go away.
Okay, well, here, look at this.
What do you want me to move on to? The next thing we were going to move on to is a Nikon D800. So obviously,
hang on a second.
Tiny spy. It's a USB thing. I got this in the mail the other day. I just wanted to show everyone.
Oh,
isn't that cute? Isn't that great? Look at that.
man. Olympus.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, cool. Is that? Yeah, it's a branded Olympus. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, they finally made something worthwhile.
Oh, should we do some questions?
Yeah. Let's do that. That's quite sweet there. How much does that cost, Chris?
It's not much. I can't even remember. I bought it with a bunch of other things. It wasn't enough for me to go, oh, should I get it? It was like I was buying a few other things, and I just tossed it on the little the cart because I don't know, it was $5. I don't even know what it was. It's 4 gigs. It's just I got cool. it for more of the desk novelty. I like to have a little USB thing sitting on my desk just to whip stuff back and forth, you know, upstairs, downstairs, that kind of thing. So I thought it'd be cute for that.
And it is Olympus, so, and God knows they make cute things.
And it's super rubberized, and you can do whatever you want to it.
I should make
all right, questions now. Sorry, guys, questions. It is cool. I have to look into that. First question. Hi, fellas. Loving the show. Keep up the good work. This comes from Michael from Portland. I've listened to the last two weeks of the show and have to admit I am a newbie when it comes to studio work. I have a small set, which I got from the local camera shop, and I've had a play, but not really got any satisfying results. Do you have any cool tips for or essentials I should be considering when trying to do studio work, or have any must-have equipment?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I'd say about studio is make sure you've got a proper backdrop. I don't care what you're doing in the studio. My big problem in the studio is if the walls are the wrong color, if the ceiling's too low, and you know, it's all about where the light is bouncing off of when you're trying to work. So, you know, get your backdrop. That's number one. Even if you just got a nicely ironed large tablecloth or something, but make a constant backdrop. And you know, that would be my very cheap, but my number one tip. If you've already got the lights, get your backdrop sorted out.
Mm.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with something like that. That's you want to be able to control your light. That's the whole point of shooting inside. And the only other thing I can think of really, since I don't have my own studio anymore, but the little tents, whenever for whatever clients, if every once in a while you need to shoot like a product or something small or whatever it is, those little dome tents, you know, just translucent white on the outside, they're essentially, for those who don't know, you just put like the item inside a soft box. And then you photograph it from in there. And those things, you know, I never had one of those. I put them off, and then I borrowed my buddies to shoot some pottery. And I was like, oh my God, how did I not? You know, I was controlling shadows before, and this thing just softens everything out, makes them look beautiful. It's got a built-in infinity back. So for tabletop shooting, you know, that's what I used to use. And this little dome thingies they're amazing. And they're cheap, and they're like little collapsible doohickeys, and you can even use them outside in the sunlight because they just soften everything, and you don't have to worry about any shadows or anything. I can't believe I was such a fool not to get one a long time ago. So they're cheap, so they're great to have kicking around in the background for any sort of mini, small product-y kind of thing.
I've got one that's
a backdrop in a box. I was going to say Ewan.
I've got a backdrop 4 foot. I've got a cube. That pops out that's 4 foot by 4 foot by 4 foot, so it's pretty big, and that cost me £34 off eBay, and it's brilliant. I use it all the time. It's brilliant, absolutely excellent.
Oh no, they're completely invaluable.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're getting a little lighting set from somewhere, the other thing is that Michael doesn't say, but I presume that he's obviously got an umbrella or a softbox with that, because I mean, those are two. You need to diffuse a light. You can't just stick a lamp up and expect to get decent results. You need some kind of diffusing on that to start off with.
Never ever shoot a woman in front of hard light. You'll never. Yeah.
She'll never talk to you again.
You'll be on the sofa, that's for sure. No, I mean, tons of stuff that you can buy, but I mean, the key elements that you've got to think about is the light, the backdrop, and then just think about reflectors. Because you know, the one thing that I invested in that has been the best buy I've ever had was £25 on a 60-inch reflector. And it was just superb. It pops open, it folds up into a bag. You can take it anywhere you like. You can stick it in a rucksack and flop it open when you get to where you want to go. And it's got a white side and a gold side, and it's the must-have thing that I've got. And I carry it around with me absolutely everywhere because it makes such a difference to the images.
I used to work with this photographer that used, now this was in his studio, so we didn't really travel with him because they're a little bit awkward. But he got, this was in Singapore, and he used to go and in the factory where, on the fifth floor was the studio and then a bunch of other factory things. One of the people were packaged refrigerators or repackaged refrigerators or did something. So anyway, he ended up getting these giant, essentially for free, if I remember correctly, refrigerator size pieces of styrofoam, which were super light. You can move them around. You could clamp them down really easy. You could actually just take two sandbags and they'd stay up. And then I had to paint as assistant one side black and the other side stayed white.
That's exactly
and
it.
Just put tape around the edges so it didn't fray. And then we had these giant human size. So if you're doing a model, full length model, you could just bounce the light in or take it away if you flip it over to the back. The black, which is on the back or the front of me, and use it as a dodge or flag.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing. It was the coolest thing. And you're like, wow, you got that for free. It's styrofoam. It's light. They stack up really easy. I mean, the DIY photographer.
There's a studio use up in Tamworth near here, and they've got styrofoam boards there, and they're 8x4. They're huge and they're great. One side black, one side white. The other thing I was going to say that's must have equipment: roller gaffer tape.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
If not, let me know, guys, when I can use something with bubble wrap, and then I'm set.
If I could get gaffer tape to be a reflector, then that would be it.
Cool. Next question comes from Taylor, and apparently he's in the witness protection program because he's not saying where he's from. But anyways, dear Ewan, Alex, Chris, and even me, Kyle. Like Kyle, I'm new to the whole world of photography of things, and at the moment, I just have a Canon G9 compact to shoot with. Hopefully, I want a DSLR, but need to know more first. One thing that has always been a mystery to me is what is meant by the white balance. Can you please explain it? Basically, explain it to him. That's better. Can you please explain it?
Explain white balance.
Question? Yeah, sure. Explain white balance. The balance between what, black and white? Is that kind of
no, gray? The camera will forget. Video sensors, well, just like film created to fall into a certain color shift. Video sensors need to be reminded what white is. And most original video camera sensors were for balance for tungsten. So you used to put a different filter on when you're going out to daylight. But it doesn't matter what filter you're on or what entry densities you're using. As light conditions change, you have to remind, essentially the most basic thing is you have to remind your camera what the color white is, so the rest of the colors fall into the spectrum properly. And you do that by zooming in or just zooming in on something white or something very, very light blue. It's a cheat and you can make things a touch warmer if you use it. But you zoom in and you hit the little white balance switch and it gives you what the color white will be under those lighting conditions at that time. So for videographers, there's a phrase that's white balance white often. And you just constantly are popping your little things. Most professional cameras have two white balances, an A and a B, so you can set them in case you're going in and out of two different rooms or two different lighting conditions. And then there's always the preset, which you have in your head, which generally you just match up. So that's what that means on your camera when you see something like, it'll say tungsten or daylight or flash. These are all different Kelvin levels. So regular indoor light, like a lamp, is 3,400. Your outdoor lights, regular sunlight's 5,600. If it goes into the shade, it's about 8,000 to 10,000 as it gets darker. And then it flips over into your tungsten 3,200 because you're using artificial light. But your camera needs to be reminded what white looks like. Otherwise, it'll shift into different colors. Most of the DSLRs are pretty good on the auto. And then the professional ones do have the ability to just dial in the Kelvin number. But essentially, that's all it is. In film, you used to just change your film. If you're shooting in the studio under tungsten, you had tungsten film. And then when you went outside, you changed it to daylight film. Or you put a bunch of filters in front of your camera to correct the light. But essentially, yeah, you're just reminding your camera what the color white is. And with a G9, most of the time, the autos are pretty good. It's only when you're shooting video that you want to avoid auto, because it'll shift while you're shooting the video. So you'll get a color shift in the middle of somebody's sentence, and you don't really want that.
Yeah, I mean, the G9's got a full manual capability as well, Tyler. So, you know, you're talking about going for a DSLR. No need. If that's shooting the quality enough image, you can do everything manually with that, you know. Just learn it.
Also remember with... it's still photography rather than video photography. It's very, very easy to correct the white balance if it's wrong afterwards. Mm. So, just shooting raw. But you can correct white balance through levels anyway. So, I mean, it's really... It's not difficult. But yeah, it's a very good starting point. It's important to know, in the same way as you needed to know what film was right to use in what environment.
Stupid question. Is white balance like contrast?
No.
No.
Okay, thanks.
No, white balance
is... Stupid question, then.
It's about color temperature. So basically, if you think of outdoor light as cold light and indoor light as warm light, cold is blue, warm is orange. So basically, indoor light tends to be a bit orange and outdoor light tends to be a bit blue. So all you're doing is telling the camera to adjust for the blueness or the orangeness.
Yeah,
gotcha.
That's it.
I gotcha.
But yeah, shooting still raw is the best thing in the world.
Easily. Definitely.
Gets me
out. Last question. Unless anybody else has any more comments about white balance.
Just before we're saying that there, because I rarely shoot in RAW because it's a pain in the ass, but to a post-processing. But Preview has got RAW support for the Canon, which has come in the last update, and it's like editing a JPEG. It's awesome. Use that, Preview. There you go. Sorry.
Okay. Preview. Awesome. Great. Next question.
So
question.
You don't shoot in RAW for a lot of the professional stuff? Is that because there's a whole show right there we can do next week?
Okay. No, I don't. I don't use RAW an awful lot at all. I mean, I shoot a lot of press-based stuff. So what's the point? And I shoot an awful lot of stuff that's product-based stuff that's going to be shrunk down to the point that it's barely visible anyway. So, you know, it's like a picture of a warehouse. So there's no detail in it. And also, it's going to go in a brochure that's printed, and it's going to go into being a picture that's 3 inches by 2 inches at best. So I don't see the point.
Well, I mean, a lot of my stuff, I've got this principle. I shoot everything in RAW, and I shoot everything on the highest resolution I can. And I store that as if it's my negative.
Yeah.
And if you want a 1500 square JPEG off it, then great, have that. But I'm going to keep the other thing for when you come back and say, can I have a 50 meg TIFF?
Yeah, but I think that's the difference of the use policy, though, is in what you're shooting, they could come back and ask for that. In what I'm shooting, they never will. So, you know, I think there's a lot of bullshit. I can't say that. I've got to edit it. There's an awful lot of rubbish talked about RAW, and there's a lot of... It's kind of like the, if you don't shoot in RAW, you're not a real photographer argument kind of comes out. And I don't think Chris and Alex are going to disagree with me on this. If you don't need to do it, it's a lot of work in post-processing for something when actually all you wanted to do is just shoot something, adjust it for levels, and send it to me. Yeah, okay, no problem. I ain't going to shoot in RAW for that.
Oh, no, if I'm on holiday, I'm never going to shoot on RAW.
Exactly.
I'm going to shoot in JPEG and forget to take them off the camera and then lose the camera. That's what I'm going to do on holiday.
By God, I'm going to shoot in Polaroid, and that's that.
You don't get much rawer than Polaroid, do you?
Exactly.
That's right.
The white
I'm looking
doesn't
for warm
very
and
well, though.
And I want it instant, damn it. last question. Hey, guys. This one is actually one that I might actually know what's going on with, believe it or not. I have a problem with a photo frame I've been given. It's a Sony 7-inch frame and works really well, but I have several images which will not show on it. When it plays the slideshow, it gets these pictures and it displays a question mark. It's the same photos every time. I looked in the manual, and the symbol isn't covered, and I've opened all the photographs, and they work fine on my Mac. I've tried using the inboard memory instead of the SD card slot, and the same thing happens. Any ideas? This comes from Mark from Brighton.
Right.
I'm guessing...
Go
on in.
Kyle gets to answer a question.
Can anyone do a drum roll?
Kyle gets
guessing
a question.
It's the file extension.
Oh, very good. It might not be
good. Maybe it doesn't. maybe it's in RAW. Maybe it doesn't display bitmap. It could be too big a JPEG. I mean, you guys would know a little bit more about size, but it's got to be the file extension.
That's very good.
Could be.
Maybe the frame doesn't like the content of the photos.
It's a censorship. Yeah, the censorship.
It's a super smart frame.
And yeah, I'll tell you what's interesting. I only sort of discovered by accident recently. I mean, most of the things you put on these whatever we're talking about, photo frames, you use JPEGs. Now, I found recently that different programs write JPEGs in different ways. And I have had, especially when I've moved things from Mac to PC, some of the things on the PC, you have to sort of open them up in something like Photoshop to be able to read the JPEG file. You can't read them in the normal, you know, the normal course of things. So I think even though, I mean, Carl's completely right, it is a file format type problem. But even if they all say JPEG, they might not necessarily be JPEGs written in the same way. I found that very, very recently. But if you're going to open something up on your Mac's going to be capable of opening up 50 different file types, whereas your photo frame can only probably open 1, 2, maybe 3. And the way to get around this is take everything off of it onto, if you've got a Mac, as you say, take everything off of it, use preview if you want, and just resave every single one of them as a different file name or an A or a B, and it will save them all to the correct file type.
I would say as well, Mark, have a look for the commonality between the images that aren't showing. See if there's something that you did. So it's the same camera, they're not photographs, they're scans. Something like that, because that could be something that leads you towards what is at the root of the issue. It could be the device that you've captured them on could be giving something out differently, putting a corruption on the file somehow. But I don't think it is correct from what you said. The only thing that I came up with that no one's mentioned yet is, Alex has kind of touched on it, is some devices save items as what's called a progressive JPEG. And a progressive JPEG has a series of layers within it, so that they tend to be shot for things like browsers, so that when the image can be quickly shown, it shows a good representation, but it's not the full detail representation, and it comes later. And some photo frames don't work with progressive JPEGs. So if you've got a progressive, just look at the file, and to check it, you should be able to open it in Photoshop and look on the EXIF data, and it'll tell you if it's progressive or non-progressive. Basic standard.
There is one last thing though. Quite simply, I don't know if they all work, but maybe if the file, the actual physical size of the image is too big, the photo frame might not be able to show it.
Could That's be. The only thing I was going to think of. Yeah, that auto.
Oh, sorry.
That auto sizing as you export out of the camera. If it's large and you dump one thing, then the frame just might be like too much and just shuts it down.
Yeah.
But the thing I think is interesting is that it displays a question mark, which isn't in the manual. How do you design something that emits information that you don't cover in your manual?
They don't know how to translate Chinese and from a question mark.
It's called cheap ass.
Guys, if you want to get your questions in, as you can see, we'll answer anything from a camera question to what's wrong with your photo frame.
Whether simple it's right to do. Or not.
Just send it to us. BagelTechPhoto, photo with an F, F-O-T-O, at gmail.com. We will answer it. As you can see, we will answer your questions, or at least try to. Question marks and all. Before we get a hold of people, we've got to give a shout out to the people that that help us bring this show, or actually basically are bringing this show to you, which is uk2.net. Go over to bageltechnews.com right now. You're going to see that click through at the bottom there that will take you over to uk2.net. Please use that. If you're looking for some, you know, great web hosting, a domain name, they've been really, really good to us, and we couldn't say enough about them. Without them, this podcast, the whole network would not exist. And I know Alex, you're also a UK2, 10 years now you've been with them.
Oh, I've used them for a very long time.
So we find them very, very good. And hopefully you will too. Again, you don't have to buy anything. Just use the click through if you're looking for something like that. That way they know we are definitely sending you UK2.net. Thank you so much for your support of the entire BagelTech network. Now, where can we get a hold of all of you? We'll start with you, Alex. Where can we get a hold of you?
Just get hold of me at AlexGFox at Twitter.
That's very simple. AlexGFox on Twitter. Get some followers. We need some followers for you.
We do, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Maybe I need to start saying things that are interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I think
you could
start with the
you
just
could send questions
one.
Over there. You can answer little tidbit photography things every once in a while on Twitter.
Yeah, the more bizarre, the better.
There you go. Chris, how about yourself?
Yeah, I'll just give the Twitter handle as well. It's at Chris Dick. And again, Twitter. I find it's the easiest way just to send out my information to people trying to remember websites. So Chris Dick on Twitter.
Good man.
Simple as that. And Ewan, is it going to be that simple for you?
Yeah, Bagel Tech News is the Twitter handle, and also Ewan Rankin. I've posted from there a little bit more just lately. And you can always send us email at bageltechphoto@gmail.com. If you've got any questions, we'll answer them badly.
See, and I only remember Twitter. That's where I talk to Ewan all the time, is Twitter.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, Kyle, yeah. You never actually announce where we can get a hold of you. So
that's true.
What, me?
Right. Yeah, at Kyle Swagger.
Well, if you've got any problems with a Sony 7-inch frame, you're the man to ask.
I got your frames covered on this show.
Oh, any problem with inches?
I feel proud of myself today. Don't ruin it, please. It's the only question I've known in how many months we've been doing this show. Jeez. I'm learning, though, and I hope everybody else is learning along with us. We will be doing the same thing next week, same time, starting at 11 a.m., should I say, p.m. It's not the Philippines, 11 a.m. UK time. We hope you will come and join us via our Bagel Tech Live page. It's great having you all back. It's great to be back here on this week's show, and we hope you all had fun. We shall see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.